Welcome to the live retail online integration webinar, 8 Proven Tactics for Improving Your Trigger Email Program Without Breaking the Bank, sponsored by Bronto Software. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I'll be the host of today's event. We have two great speakers today to discuss trigger emails, Kevin Skirsey, the Director of Marketing Communications at Bronto Software, and Amy Africa, the Chief Imagination Officer of web consulting and e-commerce firm 8x8. In today's session about email triggers, you'll learn the 6 things that make up the majority of your trigger email success, including the number one thing that nobody ever tells you about, 3 surefire tips for developing the perfect abandoned system, how triggers and blast emails differ and why triggers are critical for your future, 8 strategic and creative tricks that really work, and 7 things you must truly measure. Before we get started, however, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during at the end of the hour, but you can send them in anytime. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on the console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Here today to discuss email triggers is Kevin Skirsky. Take it away.
Thanks, Melissa, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We're really happy to be part of this webinar today because we believe that triggered messaging can add tremendous value to email marketing programs, especially for retailers and other commerce-focused companies who are trying to drive transactions and revenue. And I know Amy has a lot of information that's going to be very valuable to all of you that she's going to share in just a few minutes. For clarification, before we get rolling, triggered messages are those that are sent out via email primarily, but they can also be SMS or via social properties. But the key is that they're automatically sent in reaction to some kind of event or action taken by the subscriber. They're sent out to individuals, not in large batches, and typically triggered messages have better deliverability rates, higher response rates, and as we'll see today, they're usually able to drive much higher revenue than the average non-triggered message. And this makes sense because there's some element of personalization going on with most triggered messages. Yet despite all of this, triggered messages are underutilized by most marketers. As Amy's going to show you today, it does not need to be complex. In fact, simple triggered message campaigns like an automated welcome series perform extremely well. Here's an example from one of our clients, Gander Mountain. They're a multi-channel retailer with 116 brick-and-mortar locations as well as an e-commerce site. The marketing team at Gander implemented an automated series of messages that gets kicked off when a consumer signs up for their email list. And it doesn't matter if they sign up online, in-store, or via their call center. And the first message in the 3-part series is sent within 24 hours of their signing up. Knowing that people are typically at a high point of interest in the brand when they subscribe, Gander realized that this made for an ideal starting point. And they include a coupon good for 1 week in with this message. And then messages numbers 2 and 3 in the series are spaced out after this initial one, and each of the 3 messages in the series is slightly different. Altogether, the results are fantastic. They're seeing much higher sales per delivered and higher average order value from the welcome emails than they do from their overall email marketing program. It's simple, not complicated at all, but very effective. And Amy's going to go into some of these ideas as well as many others for triggered campaigns, but in addition to a welcome series, a few other popular triggers are abandoned cart, which is when somebody leaves an item in their e-commerce shopping cart and you could spark an email or a series of emails to try and convince them to complete their purchase. Abandoned cart messages are incredibly effective, but again, sorely underutilized. I think it's somewhere around 15% of retailers is all who do abandoned cart messages. A second type is a successful purchase. When a purchase occurs, it could set off a product review or a rewards program email. Another one is with multiple views of a product page. This could trigger a message to be sent. Once somebody views a particular product page several times, you could set the number of times. And maybe you entice them with a free shipping offer or a slight discount to get them to complete the purchase of the item that they're obviously interested in. And then a fourth type is an abandoned ad. And this is when somebody clicks on a banner ad on your site but does not convert. Maybe they could receive a specific message. So these are just a few, many other ideas and a lot of them, a lot of room for creativity when it comes to triggered messages. Trigger messages aren't limited to email. You can also trigger messages based on actions or events that happen on your social properties like Facebook or Twitter, or you can send out triggered messages through these channels. Here's a screenshot showing a workflow in the Bronto marketing platform for running a Twitter contest where the first 100 people who mention your brand name win a prize. And that's an example of a simple triggered campaign that's done via a social network. Text messages or SMS can also be used. In the example workflow that I'm showing here, a person texts in their email address and then automatically gets added to an email subscriber list. And this could be promoted at an in-store location or somewhere else where it's more likely that people won't be in front of their computers, but they would have their phones on them. So triggered messages are a great example of the concept of lifecycle marketing, which is about knowing your customers, listening to find out what matters to them and what they're interested in, and then communicating with them at the right time with the right message. And in order to really pull off lifecycle marketing effectively, triggering a large number of message types depending on a large number of triggers for a large number of people requires one of two things. You either need a small army of assistants or you need a smart platform that lets you integrate a lot of data in one system, analyze that data, and use the information about preferences, interests, and behaviors to create highly personal messages. And then you can set up automation, which is what I'm showing here, that lets these email and cross-channel campaigns execute triggered by events or actions on the part of your subscribers. So to be effective, you really need tools that are capable of handling that, and that's where we come in at Bronto. We've got a marketing platform for retailers and other commerce-driven companies to drive revenue through smart email and cross-channel marketing. And the images you're seeing here are some screenshots from our application. Bronto features something called workflow automation, which is a drag-and-drop canvas for visually architecting marketing workflows like triggered messages. We do a lot of work with our clients on triggered messages because they're of particular value for the types of companies that we mostly work with, which is retailers and other companies who are trying to drive revenue through online marketing. The benefit is very direct, translating into better conversion rates and higher revenue. With messages that are driven off of shoppers' behaviors and events, you're communicating in a highly relevant way, providing valuable information or offers on things that they've already expressed interest in. And this is precisely the type of email that people truly do want to receive. So I encourage you to visit bronto.com/resources for white papers, articles, and blog posts on best practices for email marketers and on triggered messages in particular. In particular, I would say to take a look at this white paper that we've recently put out called Automate, Increase Engagement, and Drive Revenue with Triggered Messages. And that'll reinforce a lot of what you're going to learn here today. This paper really provides a wealth of information on building valuable triggered message campaigns. So thank you all for your time today. Thanks for letting us be a part of it. I'm looking forward to Amy's presentation next. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, Kevin. Great information. So we're really excited to have Amy Africa, the Chief Imagination Officer of 8x8 and an expert on triggered email, speak. So Amy, why don't you take it away?
All right. So good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are. Thanks, Melissa, and thanks, Kevin and Bronto, for sponsoring this. Today, I'm going to talk about all of the best practices that I've seen with about 10,000 plus trigger email campaigns over the past 5 years with clients from small startups to Fortune 5 companies. And I'm going to give you all of sort of the best things that I know. And so if you're starting or you have a program, you can start with these things and then test against them and come up with your best practices and what works for you. So these are definitely places to start and sort of tricks and tips that I've learned along the way. So the first thing that I think is one of the most important things that is really underestimated when it comes to any kind of email is that email is not meant to be read. So I still see clients and companies that we don't work with, but I still see people spending tons and tons of time on email, making sure that every little, you know, colon and semicolon is perfect and this and that and the image is this way. If you're designing really good emails, the user is going to spend most likely less than 20 seconds on the email before they click to the landing page on the site. So the goal with email is not necessarily to be read, but it's meant to be acted upon. Now, if you're doing newsletters with lots and lots of information, you might have a longer user session with the email itself, but your goal is still to get them to do something that would help you further whatever it is that you want, a lead, an inquiry, a quote, sign up for a webinar, a podcast, download this, whatever. So one of the goals with email, and this screenshot is not necessarily the best, but one of the goals with email is to make sure that you have at least one action directive, which an active directive is a big button that tells the user what they're supposed to do next on every view that they would see. So a lot of times people will develop or design emails as pages, and that's not how the user sees them. The user sees one screen at a time, so you want to make sure that there's a big action directive on every view throughout the email. So if you have a three-screen type email, you're going to have at least three, preferably 5 to 6 action directives. Start shopping now, buy now, do this now, whatever, click the call, whatever it is that you want. The next thing that's important is you've got to realize that the majority of success with email is comes from outside the envelope. So the things that are going to make up your success in triggers or in thrust emails come before the person's even looked at the creative. So the things that will make the difference are your deliverability, your format, your to address, right? It needs to be personalized. We still see about 20% of the people who send email out in batches that are not personalized. The from address, and then the subject line. You have about 24 to 35 characters for a subject line for a regular email and about 12 to 16 for mobile, although short subject lines tend to work better in mobile in most cases. So one of the things that you want to do is when you're looking at any kind of email is you want to look at what you're doing outside the envelope, what your from address is, what your subject line is. If you tell all of your stuff in your subject line and you spill all the beans, there's not a real reason for them to open the email. So you want to make sure that sometimes you're provocative, sometimes you might tell the whole offer. You want to sort of switch things up a bit. We get into this habit of always having free shipping or 10% off or offer only ends 3 days or sign up for this now. But you want to really increase some of your statistics. So you want to push people at specific times to open the email and then go to the next step and not just make that decision based on what they see outside the box. The next thing that you want to, from a statistical perspective, the next thing that you want to look at is the first 2 lines and the first 2 inches of the email. And I gave you this example here because this is 401, because it's actually a bad example. So I like to show you things that are good and things that are bad throughout these slides. So one of the things that we know is that the user is going to stop, 50% of the users stop reading after the first 2 lines in email. So we still see about 20% of the people who have unsubscribe messaging at the top, worst place to put an unsubscribe message because that's someone might just stop reading after they hear how they can unsubscribe from your list. Or you'll talk about something about the images, but you won't say what the offer is or what the deadline is. You want to make sure that you're using your first 2 lines and your first 2 inches very effectively. So if people don't see anything besides the first 2 lines, first 2 images, that they know what to do next. Very important with how your email is designed. Then you want to look at the action directives. If you don't have something for the user to click on, they won't. Right, so a lot of times we say, oh, well, it's a beautiful image, and we have a brand, and people know our brand, and they'll understand. But we know that from a user perspective, from a usability perspective, if they don't see what they're supposed to do next, chances are 11 out of 12 times that they won't do it. So you want to look at those action directives that I talked about on the first slide, but also what it is that there's what urgency there is for this email. So lifetime is definitely more limited than ever, and I think that's one of the fallacies about thrust and triggers right now. In the old days, 90% of our response came within 48 hours, right? So we would get 90% of our email response within 48 hours, and we could judge email campaigns based on that. Today, we get about 80%, it's about 76% of our email response within 24 hours. And if you have a high propensity of mobile customers, you're going to get 80%, a little less than 80%, within 4 to 6 hours. So one of the things that you want to look at, and this is especially applicable if you're doing a lot of offline-online integration, is that shorter deadlines are better, and being more aggressive and pushing people to the wall faster is going to help your email and the results. The live time will also is also a benefit. The fact that it's more limited, it's a benefit in that you can squeeze a couple more mailings a week into an already jammed schedule, because if someone isn't going to click on the thing that you said on Monday, it is dead by, you know, midday Tuesday at the latest. So where we used to mail once a week, maybe twice, you might be mailing three or four times, you know, thrust, and then have additional triggers. So I always encourage people to look at the sort of the new statistics and what's happening with what their customers are doing, because if the email is flatlining a little bit faster, and you'll know that from your web stats, you'll be able to increase sort of your frequency. So the best performing emails in general, I listed them here. And we know that the biggest emails and the best emails, whether you're e-commerce or selling a service or whatever, are the sales, the free shipping, and the overstocking clearance. Statistically, those are the ones that outperform. The interesting thing is the ones that are sort of close behind are things like sneak peeks and surveys and confirmations and abandoned carts and we missed you or reactivations. So you start after the first three emails or the three types of emails, you get into all trigger emails. And they're all, mostly all of them that make up your big part of your success are trigger type emails. So when we go through this list, there are a couple of acronyms that I just want to go over, and there's some of the most important emails. So EBOP, an E-B-O-P-P, an EBOP, and an EBOCI. An EBOP is an email based on past purchase, and an EBOCI is based on an email based on selected interest. Those are two of the triggers that will probably be best for almost any company. From a results perspective, in a lot of cases, they will actually, both of them will outperform an abandoned cart, especially the EBOCI, if you work them. So part of the trigger success or the way that you get trigger success is you start out with something and then you tweak it and you tweak it and you tweak it, gets to be as close to perfect as possible, you know, the 90% rule that you have with e-commerce, and then you'll roll it out and you'll be able to use it for years and years. An EBOCI is an email based on selected interest, and what that means is that when a user comes to your site, that they're either searching for a product or they are looking at something specific, a specific category, a specific line of products, a specific line of services, something that they're interested in terms of quotes, whatever. When you look at that, sending a triggered email based on what it is that they're looking at or what it is that they have propensity for can be very successful in your strategy. We also have the We Missed You emails, which if you're not doing those every month, I'm a big proponent of those. Those are some of the best emails that you can do. Less than 10% of the people do them, and they're actually one of the best triggers that you can do on an ongoing basis. Thank you emails, and then we have another acronym, which is an EBOTA and an EBORA. It's an email based on a targeted audience or an email based on a recent action. So a targeted audience is very popular in business-to-business. So you look and you say, hey, we have a bunch of people coming to our site. Some people are secretaries. Some people are purchasing managers. Some people are the doctors who are buying for this. Some people are the hospitalists. We have to have targeted groups of targeted emails for each specific group. If you're not doing targeted audience groups, and you're especially in business to business, or if you're in a HEP category, a hobbyist, enthusiast, passionata category, I would highly recommend those because they're very successful. And then we have one more acronym at the bottom with all of these sort of best performing emails, and that's ADP and CRP, which is an automatic delivery program or a continuous refill program. And you see that with people who sell consumables. I need to get dog food every 3 weeks or every 2 weeks. I need to get business banking forms every, you know, 5 days, whatever, something that someone can order on an ongoing basis. Great, great way to connect with the user and get them into a lock-in savings program is through triggered emails. So why would you use triggers in regard to everything else? Well, triggers, which are also known as good dog emails in sort of the old days, they're, as Kevin said, they're sent out to individuals, not batches. So in many cases, your deliverability is going to be stronger and your response rate is going to be stronger because of that deliverability and also because of the timing, which we'll talk about in a minute. You have a higher response rate. As I said, you have the better deliverability, and then you have improved lifetime profit. Triggers tend to work best because they're based on what a user does. So a user comes to your site, they look at a bunch of things, you have their email address, but they don't put anything in their basket. You can send them an email that says, hey, you were looking for robots. Here are the best robots that we sell. You're taking sort of the email and making it a customized salesperson for the user. In triggers, which one of the things or the thing that most people really, really underestimate about triggers, all emails in general, but triggers in specifically, is it's about the timing. Timing is definitely the most underestimated tool in your arsenal, and you want to perfect it. Deadlines create urgency, and they cause people to focus. Even if you don't have an offer, you want to use a deadline in all of your trigger emails, because you want the user to have an open date and a close date. It will help the reptilian brain focus, but it will also, which is the brain that buys, but it will also help you with your stats, which seems to be really important these days. So people ask me all the time, you know, what time of day, what day of week works best? And, you know, 3 years ago I would have an answer, and it would change based on whatever was sort of hot in the industry and the time from a results perspective. Now you can't really answer that question, because it's really based on the number of times you mail, the amount of triggers in your program, your deliverability, and what your competition is doing. One of the things that you want to do with your triggers, because triggers should be sent out individually. So if I come to your site and I look at stuff but I don't adopt to the cart, as I said in the previous example with looking, if I was looking for robots, that within 2 hours I should get an email that says, hey, you were looking for robots, or maybe to the next day. You know, it depends on your strategy and your program. But hey, you were looking for robots. These are the best ones that we have that we want to sell you. That type of email is going to be successful based on the timing. If you send that email out in 2 weeks, I might not have a robot need anymore. If you send that email out within 24 hours, it's likely that I'm still going to have a need for that robot or whatever it is that I'm purchasing. It's the same thing with services and quotes if you're in a B2B, from a B2B perspective. So one of the things you want to look at is your timing, and what your timing of your thrust is, and how you can look at integrating your triggers into that. So if you're going to do a mass trigger program, like an email based on past purchase, or a We Missed You, or something that you would mail to batches, not necessarily individuals, you want to look at that in terms of when your thrusts are going out. So if your thrusts are going out every morning at 10 o'clock, you want to make sure that your triggers are not going out at the exact same time. If they're also in batches, you might want to send them out in the afternoon. Usually you want about 4 hours between the trigger and the thrust. And if you can't do that, then you know, it's okay. It's better to do something in this email business than to do nothing. But you want to look at your timing, you want to perfect your timing, and make sure that you know what takes priority. The biggest thing with triggers that people don't do is they don't have a traffic cop. So one of the things that happens is that someone will come to your site and they'll sign up for an email, or they'll sign up to be on your email newsletter list, they'll request a quote, they'll look at a couple of products, they might abandon a webinar sign-up form or podcast sign-up form, and technically, out of those four actions, they could get four trigger emails. Well, which one goes first? Do they get them all? Do they get them all plus your thrust or blast emails? Does that mean they're going to get 6 emails a day? Well, all of that stuff can be worked out if you have a traffic cop and you have a hierarchy of what it is that you're supposed to be doing, as well as having the timing worked out that's best for you, which is definitely different than it was 3 years ago. So what else is important? Sequence. Sequence is really critical. If you want to get the biggest bang for your buck, you want to develop programs, not one-offs. You know, I talk to people all the time, and they'll say, I have an abandoned cart program. And I'll say, how many emails do you do? We do one. Well, one email is not a program. A series of emails is definitely a program, especially coupled with other things. But just one email is not a program. That's an abandoned cart email. And there's definitely, from a user perspective, there's definitely a difference. So what you want to do is you want to look at, from a car perspective, you want to keep in contact with them till they take the next action. That next action, they either dump it or they buy it. If you're in a quote business or you're a lead form business, you want to look at, do they dump it or do they inquire? You know, you're working them through an appeal logic, much like a logic that you would see with donations from a church. And you want to look at making a story with your program and having that sequence be really good. Now, if you don't have a sequence, where should you start? My recommendation is that the first email goes out after your live time, which is really important to know what that is, after your live time to go out within 2 to 3 hours. This is specifically for abandoned carts, but it will work for other stuff. The next email would go out within 24. The next email would go out within 48. The next email would go out within 72. And then the next email would go out in 5 days, then 7 days, then 9 days, then 11 or 13. And you work it till the user does what it is that you want them to do. Now, does this work for everyone? No, because if you're a gardening company and you're selling seeds to someone in Vermont who can't plant them until March or April, sometimes even May or June, then to send them, you know, 20 abandoned carts within December or November when they're looking, the previous year, it's not necessarily going to be appropriate. So what you want to do is look at your category and what it is that you're selling and figure out the best logic for you to get the biggest bang from your program. You know, this example is Spirit Halloween, which is a Spencer's Gift company. Spencer's Gifts owns Spirit Halloween, or they're owned by the same company. And, you know, when you're looking for Halloween costumes, you might look 2 months before Halloween, but you're going to buy your costume, you know, 2 weeks before Halloween. So the emails get more and more aggressive. Now, they have an offer, but if you couldn't have an offer, you can talk about limited availability and inventory. You can talk about things being sold out. You know, there's all sorts of stories that you can tell and all sorts of stories that work from a user perspective. What else is important? So the thing that gets overwhelming is, and I get the question a lot as well, I get, you know, how do you start a trigger program? It just seems super overwhelming. There are a gazillion emails that I can do. Do I have to do them all? You talk to me about a traffic cop. That already scares me. The best way to start with triggers is to look at the emails that you're already sending out. Because it's very likely that you're already sending out order confirmations or quotes or requests for services, thank you emails, customer service emails, telephone emails, you know, emails from customer service reps or sales rep follow-ups. So it's very likely that you're sending out a lot of those emails, and it's also very likely that those emails are probably garbage because they've probably been written by someone in IT or customer service, and they're not necessarily salesy enough. So look at the emails that you're already sending out from all of the divisions that would be appropriate, that would be sending emails to your customers, and look at them from a user perspective and how you can build more of a story in those emails. The emails can be really fun, and they can definitely create a story if you start working with it. So look at those first, and then, you know, then the next thing you want to do is to get into some of the more complicated ones. Abandons are really good scores. You know, we missed you or reactivation emails, and abandons are very good scores because you're going to make money on those. And you can do abandons for abandoned carts, abandoned lead forms, abandoned searches. You can do it for site exits. You can do it for sign-up forms that people have exited. It doesn't have to just be a cart. So one of the things that you want to look at is you want to look at your abandoned program in general and realize that it's a process. So one of the things that you want to do is you want to look at your process and how it applies to email, because you can't send out emails if you don't have the names. So if I go to your site and I put something in my cart and then I abandon, do you have my email address? Because if you don't have my email address, you can't send me anything. So if you don't have my email address, you know, think about having a pop-up on exit. Yeah, people hate pop-ups. Everybody says they hate pop-ups, but they work the best. They're the best thing to collect email addresses, especially on exit. Look at catfishes on entrance. If I abandon something, and you don't have my email, but you know in my cookies that I have abandoned something, when I come back, do you have a catfish on entrance? Do you say you have X number of items in your cart along the bottom? Take me directly to my cart, and then have the email log in at that point. You know, there's all sorts of, like, tricks and tactics you can do to collect more emails. We talked about it being a series in the last or a sequence in the last slide. And then what you also want to do is you want to look at, you know, the integration of chat or telemarketing or click-to-call with mobile or anything that's going to help you get the email address and help you get the order. One of the things that people look at, especially in e-commerce, is they look at how they're going to get an email address. Live chat is and instigated chat are some of the best ways to collect email address. Pop-ups are really good ways to collect email address. You know, pop-ups are actually the best. Live chat is second. So if you don't have the email address and you know you don't have the email address, figure out a way to get it. If you can't do it or you're not, you know, not interested in either of those two, there are other ways that you can do it with a landing page. You know, stop before you leave. Here, you know, please give us your email address or send yourself your cart. You can make your perpetual carts more robust to ask the user to view cart or email cart or save the cart where you collect their email address. All of those things will really help you move to the next level. And you want to look at it as a whole program. Now, there is a magic formula to abandons. And the things that you'll know the best from abandons is that you definitely want to look at a letter-style email. A lot of e-commerce companies make the mistake of having their abandoned cart look beautiful and look like just like one of their thrust emails, and then they wonder why it doesn't work. From a user perspective, you definitely want to make sure that your abandoned cart looks like a cart email. It looks like something different. It doesn't look like your regular postcard mailing that you're emailing that you're sending out, you know, twice a week to get people to the site for an Easter sale or a St. Patrick's Day sale or whatever. So you want to look at a letter-style email where you sign the email by a real person, where you have a PS. The number one thing that's important from an abandoned perspective is that you show the products that they abandon in the email, and you show a little thumbnail of the product that they abandon as well as a little description and the price. If you can't show the picture, should you not do an abandon, you should definitely send it out anyway. But the pictures will increase your conversion, and sometimes it's pretty astronomical, so you really want to look at it. You also want to look at alternative contact information. One of the best things about email is you can put your phone number all over the place. And people will say, well, why would you do that? You want them to go in on the web. Well, the reality is if they abandon something, there's a big chance that they abandon it because they couldn't do what they needed to do on your site, or there was an error, or there was a glitch, or they didn't feel safe or secure or whatever. So what you want to do is you want to offer them alternative contact and, you know, contact methods. Yes, you could return to cart now, or if you're not interested in returning to cart now, call us. Call our friendly 1-800 numbers and we'll help you. You want to look at the deadlines, and that's really important with abandons because you're pushing someone up. You know, you want to create a beginning and an end. The reptilian brain, the brain that buys, loves beginnings and ends. It doesn't really like middles or anything else. It likes beginnings and ends because they're good contrast. So you want to look at that and look at using the deadlines. Even if you don't have an offer, deadlines are important. You want to limit the number of links. So the big thing is that with links, we look at emails and their deliverability, and emails that have tons and tons of links are often have poor deliverability. So when you look at your abandons, do you have too many links? You know, 5 or 6 is a pretty good sweet spot. Now, if you're working, you know, with a great provider like Bronto, you might be able to have 20. It might not make a difference, but you want to look at it anyway. You want to look at being really concerted from a user perspective, and from your perspective, you want to look at it to being really concerted, really tight as to how to sell the product. You want to make sure the carts and forms are still active. This impacts about 25% of the people. So one of the things that will happen is that you'll send out an abandoned cart email or an abandoned search email, and then the user will go, and the stuff that they were interested in is no longer there. Excuse me. So one of the things you want to do is you want to make sure before you send out any sort of trigger email is that it's appropriate. So run it against your inventory files. Run it against your people who bought files. Run it against your unsubscribe files, whatever it is that you need to run it against, and then send it out so that you're not sending out a bunch of abandoned carts where when the user actually goes to purchase it, the item is out of stock. Right? So you want to look at that. And then you really want to look at developing a separate program for mobile shoppers. So one of the things that we know is that mobile users, 9 out of 10 carts or more, 9 out of 10 carts or 10 out of 10 carts in some cases are going to be abandoned. It could be your cart from a mobile perspective. It could be that the user is just not ready to buy on their phone. It could be that they want to use PayPal and you don't offer it. There's all sorts of reasons. But one of the things you want to do is you want to look at how you can talk to your mobile people separately. And it could be, as Kevin said, it could be text messaging. It could be emails. It could be a combination of the two. But you want to look at a separate program for them, and also look at how you can convert them to the regular site until you get your mobile site into really working order. Because nothing frustrates a user more than sending them right back to the place where that they had the mistake and they can't do anything about it. Then you'll really lose them. So what are some things that will make emails work? So the things that are most important, we talked about at the very beginning, which are the timing and the outside of the envelope factors. If you screw those up, nothing else is going to matter. So really look at the timing, look at the outside of the envelope factors, look at the offers with deadlines, and then look at some things that we haven't talked about. So personalization will definitely help. I used an example here of Dear Gardening Friend. Great Garden Plants has one of the most successful trigger programs I've seen. But Dear Gardening Friend, not so good. It's you know, there's this, especially with triggers, this is a place to personalize it. Now, in triggers, I'm not a big fan of personalizing in the subject line just because I've done a lot of testing and I don't think it works all that well. But I'm definitely a fan of personalizing in the emails. Lots and lots of action directives. Action directives are the buttons that get people to do what it is that you want them to do. So it's important to do that. Buying visuals. You know, in triggers, there's two formats that work primarily. One is a really simple text format, because it looks different than anything else, and it looks like an email that you got from a friend. And another thing is, you know, a pretty designed email. So you test, you know, a couple of them and figure out what's right for where. And if you have a really good program, you're going to end up using both. The other thing that's important is, you know, being strategic with your social sharing efforts. You know, I'm seeing a lot of emails that are not working these days. You know, I review a lot of client strategies, and the emails that are not necessarily working in terms of profitability are the emails that they're putting all sorts of Facebook stuff on and Twitter stuff on and Pinterest stuff on. And I'm not opposed to any of that, but you need to be careful about your social sharing icons. If you send them a trigger that says, hey, you abandoned a cart, go look at our Facebook site, you're not going to necessarily get the order that you wanted, you know, with from an abandoned cart email. So look at, you know, there's a time and a place for everything, and look at where you're using your social sharing icons and, you know, what's appropriate and what's not for the email. You also want to look at remailing your non-opens with a different subject line. So one of the tricks that nobody tells you about is that if you mail a bunch of people and people who don't open that email, try it again with a different subject line. You know, maybe even a day later, a couple days later. You know, some people do it the same day. I'm not a big fan of that, but whatever works for you. And, you know, email it again with a different subject line and see what the different response is. You know, subject line testing, as I said in the very beginning, is definitely a big thing, and it will definitely help you. And, you know, that's one of the easiest ways to sort of milk your creative. If you have a really good trigger email program, you're going to start small with your thank yous and the confirmations, and then you're going to go into the we missed yous and the reactivations and the, you know, sort of the abandons, and then you're going to start doing all sorts of other stuff because you're going to see that triggers work. Your triggers should perform 4 to 6 times your best performing thrust or blast emails. So if you have a thrust or blast email, your best one is performing at 4%, you know, your triggers are going to perform at 4 to 6 times that. And if they're not, you know, you want to look at what you're doing and whether it's right or wrong. an abandoned cart series without an offer will perform at 10 to 12% without any sort of deal whatsoever. With a deal, it's going to perform at 15 to 20%, and if you integrate outbound telemarketing and instigated chat and all sorts of other things, it could perform up to 60%. Those same statistics are valid for search. So one of the things you want to do is you want to start small and really perfect your programs. But when you perfect them, you know, look at how they impact all the other programs that you have. So what else works? So we talked about working the preview panel, right, and the views, you know, the first 2 inches, the first two lines. We talked about using your links wisely and making sure you pay special attention to the first two sentences of your email and adding a PS. Some of the other things that I really recommend, integrating pictures of people. We don't see pictures of people enough in emails, and because emails tend to apply more to the neocortex and the reptilian brain, it's one of the things that will definitely help you. You don't have to overdo it, but if you're sending out an abandoned cart email and you send a picture of the owner of the company or someone that is trustworthy that you would give your money to, definitely you can see lift in that. You don't want to overdo it, and you don't want to use stock photos, but if something is or really generic photos, stock photos are fine, but you don't want to use the stock photos that everybody else is using. But you want to look at really meaningful photos. So if you're a company, you know, as we saw in that Great Garden Plants example, Chris and or Mary, the two owners, are in lots and lots of their emails because they have a relationship with the users. Totally applicable. Working the copy. The copy 80 is that 80% of your copy is going to be sort of in just the success is going to come in a very few things. So the headline, the subhead, the captions on the photos, and any sort of quick facts or bullets that you have, and the action directives are the only things that people are going to read in the email. So if you have lots and lots of superfluous copy, it's most likely not going to be read unless it's in the caption, the headline, the subhead, and any other quick facts, bullety type items. The other thing that's important is looking at user-generated content. Very good for triggers, ask the experts, testimonials, case studies. Those kinds of things really work well. You know, now those might not be the best performing trigger emails that you have in terms of sales, but you'll look and you'll see that after you do sort of a 50 of the best cooking tips that we have from our users around the world type trigger email based on all of the people who looked at baking or something like that, the next couple of emails, you'll see a spike in response. So when you're using UGC, look at it as a spike in response for the next emails. Landing pages are often more important than the emails. So we talked about this in the very first slide, is that emails are not meant to be read. They're meant to be clicked on. And when you click on, they're going to get to a landing page or some sort of page that they're supposed to act on, whether it's to buy or inquire. That's the page that you need to work. So if you're sending pages and you're sending them to your product pages or you're sending them to a category pages that's not that great, you might the emails might not work all that well. So if you're seeing really good front-end statistics but sort of poor back-end statistics, look at your landing pages and see how you can improve them. What other things are important? Using different formats. That's not on this list, but it's a great thing to do. As I talked about, you know, text formats or a postcard format or an MPO, which is a multi-product offering format, all of those type things will really work well for you. So, you know, in companies that I see that have really successful trigger programs, they might have 20 to 50 formats that they use on a monthly basis. You know, all of those formats are sort of variants on, you know, a couple of specific formats, but don't be shy to sort of go outside the box in the trigger stuff. And another thing that's not on this list, which I think is really important, is to test video. And video has been killer in thrust and blast emails, but it's also now become very important in trigger emails, especially the EBOCs and the EBOTAs and the EBORAs, the ones I talked about at the beginning, the acronyms that I sort of spelled out. Because video, you can say, hey, as I used in the robot example before, hey, you looked for a robot. Here are the five robots that we think that you should buy because they're our best-selling robots, and here is a robot video on how to pick a robot or whatever it is that you have for video. The thing about video is that, you know, video can work really, really well or it can work really poorly in terms of conversion. A lot of it, the success has to do with how much you infomercialize it. You know, if you're really aggressive in your video with blue screen pitches at the end, at the beginning, telling the user what to do, keeping your video 1 to 2 minutes, it will work on an e-commerce site or a service site, and it will definitely work in your email. So I would look at testing. If you're pretty sophisticated in triggers and you want to go to the next level, you can't just take one because it could be just the video, but take 3 or 4 different videos, test them out, and see what kind of lift you get in terms of product and conversion. Excuse me, profit and conversion. I definitely have a frog in my throat. I apologize for that. Okay, so a couple of the last slides. So this is not a gratuitous plug for my blog, at which I'm sporadically at. This is to really make sure that you sell your soul to the devil for email addresses, right? So the biggest thing about triggers is they're not going to work if you can't mail someone. So there are two things that I see that happen online a lot in terms of triggers. One is that we don't ask for the email address enough. So you see here that I have an Ask Amy collection. I have a free newsletter. I have a free tip. I have a Contact Amy. I mean, I have, 25 ways to collect an email address on pretty much every page of my site. Is it obnoxious? Absolutely. But when I collect your email address and I know that's the email address I can mail you at, I get rid of those ways and I can ask you something else, right? So one of the things is ask aggressively. You know, where a lot of the e-commerce sites bury their email capture along the bottom. They don't have in their perpetual card. They don't have a pop-up on exit. All of those things are no-nos. You want to make sure that you're aggressive about collecting emails. Once you get the address, then it's fine to move on. The second thing is that if someone comes from an email, right, and they come to your site and they do something, you have their email address. And very, very few people understand that you can mail those people, right? So if I'm signed up for your email list and I come to your site from an email, I can mail you. So, look at how we look at abandoned carts and we say, oh, well, you just have to do the people that have registered in the cart and you just have to do this. And I read, that someone got sued for that. Use your emails responsibly and you're going to be fine. So that's, selling your soul to the email, to get email addresses, very important. The other thing is build on your success. If something works, you keep doing it. If you have a "we missed you" email that goes, you've knocked it out of the park, don't create a new one the next month. Send out the same email. It's going to be different customers or people who haven't responded. So you use these things over and over and over and over and until they stop working. You can tweak them or test them or whatever, but don't just throw them out because you're sick of them, because the user probably has no clue what they are. And then the last slide that I have is to really measure what matters. And I gave you a list of the things that are important to measure from a user perspective and from your statistical perspective. So, everybody measures the open and delete rates and the click-through rates, but I gave you some of the other things that you want to measure. And remember that your landing pages are going to make way more of a difference than anything. So if you have really good front-end statistics, as I said, and bad back-end statistics, look at your landing pages. And that was it for me.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Amy. That fabulous presentation as usual. So much information there. Luckily, we'll be giving out the presentation at the end, so it just seems that there was so much information, it'd be hard to take so many notes. Well, it's time for the Q&A. We have about a little bit over 10 minutes, and we did get some good questions, so I'm just going to jump right in. And most of these questions are for you, Amy. Quite a few folks have been commenting or asking questions about at the beginning of the presentation when you were talking about unsubscribes. So, for instance, one of our listeners said that many people consider placing an unsubscribe at the top of the email to be a customer-friendly best practice. Do you disagree? And if so, can you provide an alternative?
I definitely think it's a customer-friendly best practice. I don't think it's a best practice from a response perspective, and I've tested this way more times than I can count. So if you feel really strongly, my guess is that a lot of those questions came from B2B people because B2B people tend to like to do the unsubscribe at the top. It is your message. So if you put the unsubscribe message at the top and your first thing when you open the email is, hey, would you like to get off our list, that is your action directive from a user perspective, from a reptilian brain perspective, from a sort of an overall buying perspective. So if you test it, it usually has a massive impact on your conversion. I'm a big, you know, proponent of being really, and I have to testify about this all the time, so I'm really, cautious about what's right and what's wrong from a legal perspective. And I think that having a really good opt-out message at the bottom, very customer-friendly, lots of choices, a good privacy center, a good preference center, all of those things are really important. The one thing that I will mention also with customer that, you know, it might be customer friendly to have that customer, that unsubscribe message at the top, but one of the things that we know is that 50% of the people who click unsubscribe messages at the top do so in error, meaning that they click on the message, meaning but they don't want to do it. They want to go to the site, and all of a sudden they're off the list. And if they click that, then you're really obligated. You can try to save them, but you are pretty much obligated to take them off the list. So one of the things is that we know that people are going to click the first couple links that they see in an email. You don't want it to be the unsubscribe. So, you know, from a user perspective, we make a lot of mistakes. If you have them at the top and you feel, hey, I have to have them at the top, she's smoking crack, Amy doesn't know what she's doing, we're putting on the top because we're much more customer-centric, then make sure that when they click that link that they have a really good privacy, you have a really good preference center where you try to save them, because otherwise you're definitely going to lose them.
Yeah, I mean, another listener also was concerned about that, and I guess his deliverability expert specifically told him to include the unsubscribe in the pre-header to reduce spam complaints. That will get them blacklisted. So, you know, can you just kind of comment on that in terms of the whole blacklisting and all spam issue around that?
So people who tell you to put unsubscribe messages at the top in a lot of cases are email service providers that know that your list isn't that good. So if you have a lot of spam complaints, if you have a lot of block complaints, they're going to give you specific things to say, this is a warning before we dump you. These are the things that you can do to try and save yourself. If you're going to do that, then one of the things that you can do, you know, if you have a bad list or you're spamming or you're doing sort of borderline practices, then you might have to do it. I would only do it if my provider said there was no other choice and I couldn't find another provider who would mail for me. And there are people who are in that category. So, you know, if that was my only alternative, I would consider it, but I would definitely make that a teeny message, and then I would make my big message in a big headline with a big button to click through with lots and lots of urgency. I mean, I would really take the emphasis off of it.
Okay. That's great. Another question was about, these are some sort of general questions about emails and subject lines. One listener wanted to know about your thoughts on including a customer's name in the subject line of an email.
Yeah, so I mentioned that a little bit earlier, and Kevin can weigh in on this. I'm not a big fan of that with triggers because I've done a lot of testing, and I haven't found that it actually helps. I do feel like personalization in the email is really solid, but from a subject line and triggers, I don't actually see that it has actually done amazing things. In a lot of cases, it actually depresses some of the response.
Yeah, that's kind of how we feel about it as well. It seems like that is more of an older tactic for personalization, an attempt at personalization, and everyone pretty much now realizes that that's not true personalization, and that really with triggered messages, that the actual personalization is going to come from within in the body of the message with whatever it is that you triggered based on and whatever it is that you're offering or the message that you're saying. So it's really not necessary from a personalization perspective, and yeah, like you said, possibly could even have a negative effect on that.
Okay, great. Here's a question about remessaging or retargeting non-opens. How can you be sure that the recipient didn't read the email in the preview pane? Because apparently this doesn't show as an open.
That's a fantastic question, and you can't. So what you're looking at with any sort of email statistics in a lot of cases, I mean, there are definitely some ways you can. I don't recommend any of them, but there's definitely some spy-y type things that you can do, which are prevalent these days, but not necessarily the best thing, and I'm not a fan of them. But you can definitely not know a lot of stuff on emails. So measure to 65 to 80%. It's sort of like deliverability. You know, I mean, there are many, many – Bronto is not one of them. I want to be clear on that. But there are many providers right now who tell you they have 96, 98% deliverability, and they count everything that goes to spam or trash because that's still technically delivered. You know, so you've got to be careful with some of these metrics, and you also have to look at all of the metrics with a grain of salt. So when you test some of this stuff, especially like the remailing, the non-opens, it could bomb for you, but it could be the best thing that you could do. So it's worth to test it, you know, two or three times, and if it, you, then you make your decision. But it's an awesome question, and you can't really know unless you use some of the sort of smarmy tactics that I wouldn't recommend.
Okay, that is a good question. Okay, how about signing up new subscribers? One of our listeners said that he used to force everyone to click a confirmation link in their email when signing up new folks, but he found that 50% of users never actually clicked their confirmation link. So in general, what do you think about confirming email signups?
Huge, not. I'm definitely not a fan. So, and actually, if he had 50%, he was awesome because the average you lose is 60 to 70.
Huh.
So he actually lost less than most people do. I'm not a big fan. The info marketers tend to use it, you know, AWeber type customers, and you know, and I understand that because there's so much garbage. But if you're a solid e-commerce company or a solid service company with a really good provider, you're not going to have that problem, and you're not going to need to do it. You know, if you handle your unsubscribes properly and your bounces and blocks properly, you're not going to have a bad file. The problem is, you know, people who are looking in phone books for email addresses, you know, and directories or getting them off of other people's blogs and adding them to their list. If you're that kind of mailer, then you're going to have to subscribe because nobody – you're going to have to confirm your subscribes because nobody's going to mail you unless you do it internally. But, you know, you're not going to – no provider's going to want to touch you. But if you're responsible, you don't have to do those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of being responsible, one of the listeners wanted to know about double opt-in. Is it recommended? That's a tough one, I guess.
Kevin, do you want to talk about that?
Is that different than the previous one? I mean, it seems like a kind of a similar situation to what we just talked about. How you address the previous question, I mean, a confirmation via the email is pretty similar to a double opt-in.
Yeah.
So I would probably say the same thing, that it's really more a matter of how well you maintain your lists and how well you take care of your unsubscribes and that kind of thing, and it's going to maintain a healthy file, and you're not going to need to worry about that as much. But I don't know. Do you feel the same way, Amy?
Yeah, that's why. I mean, it was sort of like what I just answered. That's why
yeah.
I was giving you a shot.
I just wanted.
I mean, if you're really responsible, you're not going to have problems. If you're borderline responsible, then you're going to have problems. Or if you mail really infrequently. So one of the things that I see is business-to-business people will mail because they need business and they're desperate for business, and they'll mail six times in January. And then they'll be swamped with business, and they won't mail again until March of the next year, right? So, you know, their file will have been dead for over a year, and then they need business again, and they try to be aggressive again, except, you know, a quarter of business contacts leave within a year. And so a lot of their names will be crap, and they still mail aggressively, and they're adding a bunch of new names, but those new names might not even have been there because they haven't mailed them ever. Those are the kinds of things where you might, if you're sort of cavalier like that, then you might have to have those kind of processes because you're not mailing frequently and your list isn't that healthy. If your list is healthy, you're not going to have to worry about it.
Yeah. Okay. It looks like we have time for just about one more question. You talked a lot about graphics and stuff in the emails. This listener wanted to know about video. Do you recommend linking subscribers to a video in your email? I feel like that's an ongoing question that people have. Does it get through the spam filters? The link versus the actual video? I mean, can you just kind of address that in general?
Absolutely. Kevin, you want to talk about video first?
I know that video and email definitely can increase click-through rates quite a lot. So it's you know, a very powerful medium for persuasion. As far as whether or not, it's another one of those where it probably depends a little bit. You know, the answer is it depends. It's like other email content decisions. You really have to decide on what it is you're going to send. So you need to test and segment and make sure that you're sending to subscribers a video or a link to a video that's actually going to be valuable to those subscribers and not just think, well, everyone loves video, so we'll just include a link to a video in our email and blast it out. I think it still really depends. So. And then you could look at information on if you have sent links to videos and emails, then take a look at who opened those and who clicked on them, and maybe use that as a way to determine who are my subscribers who enjoy video via email and who are my ones who don't. And then for future ones, you can really use that first list, the ones who responded positively to it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the only thing I would add to Kevin's statement, because I think that he covered it perfectly, is it's, you know, I see clients where video works really well, and then they add video to every one of their emails, and then video doesn't work so well anymore. So definitely, as Kevin said, you know, do it when it's appropriate and don't do it when it's not. So if it's in every email, you might not have the best thing, or it might be okay for you, but you need to test into it and figure out what's right for you. And then the other thing that always comes up a lot, and this sort of is in the video tangent, is, you know, people will say to me, you know, this is just too many emails. If I have a trigger program, someone could get 25 emails from me in the week, you know, and this just seems like way too much and this is too overwhelming. Well, if the user is doing stuff on your site and the emails are positioned properly, they're not going to think it's annoying. If the emails all look like your thrust or blast emails and they all look alike and they all have the same message and you don't care what it is that they did for an action and your we missed you email looks like your happy birthday email, which looks like your abandoned cart email, it's not going to work. So the thing about emails is that they are, in a lot of cases, still customer servicey or very friendly or sort of nice sales approachy. And so if you're being responsible and really good with them, they're going to work like crazy. If they will get too big brother if you are not doing it from a good place and not with good intentions. And I'm not saying that to sound woo-woo, but if it's like with a spam, if your file is healthy, you can do one thing. If your file is unhealthy, you have to do another. If your emails are really solid and you're writing them from a customer service-friendly place, the users are going to respond to them, whether it's 3 emails a week or 50 emails a week. You know, and people will test into that. I mean, I have someone who mails their abandoned carts for 3 years until they dump them, and they have one of the most successful customer abandoned cart programs that I see, and they get 85% of the people to convert. And this is a billion-dollar company. So, you know, it really has to do with your messaging, and you have to work that messaging out internally based on your users and what it is that you feel comfortable doing as a company.